thank you for joining us today on Stories from the Wall, a podcast of the National Memorial for the Unborn. For those of you who are not familiar, the National Memorial for the Unborn is located in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it's a ministry to those who have experienced abortion. It provides an opportunity to honor children and to heal the pain of the loss of those children. And so today, I'm joined by Mindy LeFacheur, who is the founder and president of An Even Place. Welcome to the podcast, Mindy.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here with us today. And we're going to hear a bit of your story, and you're going to tell us about your abortion experience, and I'm going to let you go ahead and get started.
Well, I guess what I always say is that abortion doesn't come by itself, and my story is an example of that. And so as a child, there was divorce. That's where it started, really, was divorce. And it just kind of plunged me down. My mom got a job across the country and moved me away from my father. And I know it was no intention of her to hurt me, but it did. And so I was with a sitter. You know, when you move to California, you generally have to live in one city and drive 2 hours to another to go to work. And so I was left with sitters a lot. And the one particular gal that I was with, the neighbor lured me into his house and proceeded to do things to me that were inappropriate. And that just really messed with my eight-year-old mind, as you can imagine.
Sure.
And so as the years went, you know, my dad was not around much in terms of he was busy living his own life. And, of course, we're across the nation. I would see him in the summertime, and that would really be, you know, the extent of when I saw him. We did have some interaction, but he wasn't always the best dad.
So there was not a constant presence?
No. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, my mom worked nights, so I was left alone a lot to figure things out. So soap operas and my friends raised me. Aww. That's a terrible, terrible mentorship, if you will. But that's who raised me. And long story short, there's some other things that happened in my life that were pretty traumatic and led me kind of onto this path of sexual promiscuity, looking for love, wanting really, thinking that's where it was found. I mean, I genuinely thought love was found in sex, and it just isn't. It always falls short and is always empty. But in that mindset and in that lifestyle, and I was a mess, you know, partying, drinking, and I just didn't like who I was, to be really honest. And I thought I was somehow better when I was under the influence, which was a lie, too, because I was so much more obnoxious and worse. But I ended up pregnant. And the first time I got pregnant, I had been, I was with one guy. And by the time I broke up with him and got together with the other guy that I was wanting to be with, we found out I was pregnant, and he said, it's either me or the baby. And so I said, okay, that's easy. You know, I'm looking for love. You're willing to stay. This is an easy choice. And I had an abortion. But the reality is I know what abortion is. My mom was a neonatal nurse is what they called it back in the day in Denver. And so I would go up to her unit and see the little babies that were 6 months, you know, gestation when they were born, and they fit in your hand and they survive. And so I knew what pregnancy was. I never believed that lie. And I swore I'd never do that again. And I got pregnant again and had my daughter. Within 3 months of that abortion, I got pregnant, and then I chose to keep my daughter. And but a few years later, I got pregnant again. And this guy said, he said to me, I don't want you and I don't want that baby. And I said, well, okay. I mean, what do you do? Abortion wasn't easy, but I was familiar with it. And so that's what I did. I felt like that was kind of my only choice. I was afraid to tell anybody else, to be honest with you. And, so the third time I got pregnant, was with my daughter's father again. And, there was promises there that were broken. And when I told him I was pregnant, he said, basically, I got to go eat dinner. And I thought, wow. Okay, you know, the pregnancy with her was very emotionally draining because of the relationship that we had. It was very toxic, and I just didn't think I could emotionally survive another pregnancy. I look back now, and I know I could have. But at the time, in the middle of that stress and fear and shame and guilt and all the other things, I didn't think I could, and so I chose abortion again.
Yeah. that emotional roller coaster was definitely at work.
Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, early in my childhood, after the man did those inappropriate things, I thought, well, who does this to people who are worthy of love, you know? And then later on in my life, some other traumatic events happened in my life, and I started to think, well, maybe there is something wrong with me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then after three abortions, I kind of decided in my own mind, there's something wrong with me. I really am not a person of worth to do this to their children. No, it's kind of the thought and how I went down. And from there, I just bottomed out in my life.
So the effects of that last abortion kind of put you in a different place emotionally.
Yeah. I just really resigned to the fact that I'm just not worth anything and I'm trash and, you know, no wonder people treat me this way. It just took me a long time to really acknowledge it.
Okay.
You know?
So what was the turning point for you?
When I got saved, and it wasn't too long after that third abortion that I gave my life to Jesus. I was reading the Bible. I had been sent a Bible by my stepmom, and I was reading the Bible and was interested in Jesus. And then I moved up there with her and my dad and started going to church. And just one day, it was just like, it was a process really, but one particular day I was like, I want Jesus. I want this. I want I don't want my life the way it is any longer.
Sure.
And I got into Bible studies. I got into prayer groups. My stepmom was getting me plugged in, you know, like a good Christian, a good discipler. And but I would go home at night and I would lay on my bed and I would hear, God can't love you because you killed his kids. And those people are not like you. They'll never understand you. And, you know, by way of context, I didn't have any Christian upbringing at all. I didn't know about grace. I didn't know we're all the same at the cross. You know, sin is
right.
Sin. I didn't understand spiritual warfare and weapons. I mean, weapons of warfare was completely off my radar. And so I thought what I was hearing was truth. And for fear of rejection and fear, you know, being condemned and all those things, I walked away from the church. I walked away from God and I went back to my old lifestyle. And, you know, I tell people it's like having an old coat, you know, like I had this old leather jacket that was too big for me and it was faded and it had cigarette holes in it. And, you know, I really loved that jacket. It would fit over all my sweaters and it was nice and broke in. But the reality is it was torn and worn and ugly and completely outdated. And, but I didn't want to trade it in for something new that I had to learn. Like I was familiar with this jacket.
Right.
And I feel like our shame and our suffering is often like that. We don't want to throw off the old and put on the new because we're familiar with how the old operates. We're familiar with what to expect, even though it's hurtful and suffering and painful and, you know, all those things. And yet I'll go back to what I know, right?
Right.
And I stayed there for about a year, but, you know, I had tasted that God was good. I had, and I knew this is not where I want to be, but I really didn't know what to do. So my kind of modus operandi, if you will, was to move and run. And I left that state and went to a different state. And my stepmom said, would you like me to find you a church out there? And I was like, well, sure, you know. And I started going to church and I realized, okay, this is where I want to be. I mean, and back up just a bit, just for a little bit of context. That first church, nobody was talking about their struggles. Nobody was talking about their personal things, like even like today things, not things that were from their past mm-hmm. that were affecting them today, but even like what's going on today kind of thing. And if they were, I didn't hear it. But in my mind, in my memory, nobody was talking about it. And in my thoughts, I was like, well, maybe I'm the only one.
Right.
I'm alone. Nobody else struggles like I do. You know? But when I left that state and was introduced to this other church and started going there, I realized nobody's talking about their stuff here, too. It really just must be me. I'm the only one that struggles. And so I thought, well, I'll just keep quiet, and I'll just go to church because I know it's where I need to be. I know I need to be with God. I was still a mess. I brought some of my old habits into my new faith because I didn't know how to shed those. I didn't know how to be different. You know, it took time. It was a process. But I just knew I needed to be there. I needed to be with these people.
And so you're in a different state. You're in a new church. So what grabbed you and helped you to turn the corner and to address your abortion trauma?
Yeah. Well, I heard about this thing called Pregnancy Center from the pulpit. And I was like, oh, I never heard of that. I got to go help. I got to go do something. And I ran down there after work one day and walked in and said, you know, I got to help you. I got to tell these girls don't have abortions. And she said, well, why don't you tell me your story? You know, what got you here? And I thought, no big deal. You know, I sat down and I told her my story. And that's probably the first time I ever told it from start to finish. And I was left weeping, just weeping. Mm-hmm. And I always say I was on the floor weeping, but that's symbolic because I was totally undone mm-hmm. by my own life. You know, the choices I had made, the choices people made for me, what got me here, and just how broken I really was. And she just so kindly said, well, I think you need to take this Bible study. That was Forgiven and Set Free. And I took it. And, you know, in all transparency, I always say I was the worst participant. I didn't do all the work. You know, I showed up. I had a lot to say and without doing the work. And I was probably very frustrating to have in there. But I will say what I did learn in that study when I did do the work is because again, I'm a brand new Christian. I got to see the Old and the New Testament come together and be applied to life. You know, there was a real discipleship aspect in learning about things like forgiveness and not just receiving it, but giving it, you know, what to do with anger and depression and, you know, where is my child and those kinds of things. So it was just very rich in discipleship. And I never forgot that. It was such a great experience for me.
So it was like that build up, that the dam finally broke when you were able to tell your story from start to finish and all that emotion was just poured out.
Yeah.
And so you found some healing through this particular Bible study. And so from the Bible study, what's going on next?
Hmm. Well, the Lord shut the door. So it just completely shut. I don't even remember what happened next in terms of why I didn't start with the Pregnancy Center. But it would be about 15 years-ish before I would get an opportunity to go to a Pregnancy Center again and work there. And I did. I was really excited to do abortion recovery. What I didn't understand, I had done a lot of work regarding my abortion. It was the biggest thing in my life. There was lots of Sure. other trauma in my life, but that was the biggest one. And because it's something I did to somebody, everything else was done to me. And so I just really dismissed everything else. And that was not the right thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. But I went to the Pregnancy Center and I was still a mess. I didn't know it, but I was still a mess when I went there. But through that, somewhere in that process, I learned about the National Memorial. I don't know how that was. I don't remember how I got introduced to you all, but I was immediately captivated by the idea, you know, and I'm not a super sentimental person, but the idea, you know, when we have abortions, we don't get to honor our children. We don't get to talk about them very much. We don't get... It's not like when you have children, you're doting on them, you're buying things for them,
right.
You're taking them to soccer, you know, you're doing all these things to help them become a wonderful individual. Of course, our children are gone, so there's nothing we can do. But the reality is there's a hole in our heart
yes.
that's really empty, and there's a point of closure that we need. And so the memorial just was huge for me in that, you know, and just that I got to put my children's names up on a wall. I got to let other people see that they exist,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of like a physical reminder of who they are, to honor and value their lives.
Right, because we don't have graves for our children.
Mm-mm.
There are no graves for our children
mm-hmm.
that are lost to abortion. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's a very physical, very mm-hmm. real, visible, tangible
mm-hmm.
reminder of the existence of those children.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so you placed, did you just do one or do you have three?
I have three children that I chose abortion for, and I did one plaque
mm-hmm.
at the time. I kind of wish now I would have done three, but
mm-hmm.
They're together, I guess, symbolically on that plaque. And
right.
that, in some strange way, brings me comfort. But I remember putting my plaque up on the wall, but I don't remember how I even got there. The former director, and she was great. I had a bit of a good relationship with her, you
mm-hmm.
know. And because I was doing abortion recovery at my local pregnancy center not far from here, I was able to bring some people down and, you know, do some different things with the memorial. And it was just really meaningful.
Sure. So tell us, did you know the gender and the names of your children when you, so tell us how that happened.
Yeah. Okay. So in the first, I've done more than one abortion recovery group, if you will. I've done several kinds. But the first one, the Forget and Set Free, I did all those years ago. They encourage you to have a memorial and name your children. And they said, don't make it over spiritual. I didn't listen to many people then about things. But I made it. I don't know if I made it spiritual, to be honest with you, or if really the Lord was doing this. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So I named my children Barnabas, Barabbas, and Timothy. And I couldn't have told you why at the time. Because who, I mean, Barnabas and Timothy maybe, but Barabbas, why? So I didn't get it. But years later, when I was signing up to work with the Pregnancy Center, of course, you have to go through a Bible study. Right. And I went through, this time, Surrendering the Secret. And when it got to the names of, you know, naming your children and stuff, I took a little bit of a pause and stepped back and said, why would I name them? Where did those names come? Did that come from me and my crazy mind, or did that come from the Lord? And what I started to see in that was that God gave me the gospel in those names. Because Barnabas is, you know, the murderer, the rebel rouser.
Barabbas.
Yes. Yeah, he's the murderer and the rebel rouser. He's the bad dude that, you know, when Jesus is standing there all covered in blood with the wreath of thorns on his head, and they're saying, Pilate's trying to get out from underneath and trying to get Jesus released, and they're saying, no, release Barabbas. Yes. And so that's like a picture of the great exchange.
Yes.
You know, he was this murderer, true murderer, was getting released, and Jesus, who was sinless, was getting ready to take his place.
Yes.
And so that was that. And then Barnabas, his name is Son of Encouragement. And so once we get saved, we're encouraged. And Timothy means dear one. And so we are dear to God. And to me, that was, I guess, just a picture of the gospel, if you will, like where God has me in that life. But I chose, after that point, I really want my children to have normal American names. You know? And so I thought about it a little bit and prayed about it. And I thought, you know, what better way to honor my dad than to name one after my father? I asked my husband if he would name one of the children. I named one of the children after one of the fathers, because I did know that father. And then my husband named one.
Mm-hmm. So tell us how, I mean, have you shared this information with your daughter? Does she know about her brothers?
She does. I felt very, my daughter's always been very wise and intuitive, and I felt that very young I should tell her the truth. And not just her, but I had a little Bible study going with her and her friends, and I told them all. It was in junior high. I mean, a really young age. And I was really kind of a point of vulnerability, because I was not all the way healed at that point. But I really think, looking back, that not knowing exactly what happened to all those girls, it was a small group, that, you know, maybe that story stuck with them somewhere in their lives to help somebody else, or maybe even to help encourage themselves.
Definitely. Okay, so you placed the nameplate on the wall at the memorial, and you're working at the Pregnancy Resource Center. Mm-hmm. And so tell us about your role at the Pregnancy Resource Center. What did they have you doing?
I was doing everything. you know, it was a young pregnancy center when I started. And so all young ministries have lots of needs and not a lot of people. And I was ready to work. I mean, I really was ready to work. Mm-hmm. What I didn't understand, that I was trying to prove I had value. So all my life, I never really understood that I had value. And I inside was always crying out. And these are from the wounds, those other wounds that I told you about that I never dealt with. And so I brought that all in. And I cannot tell you what I was doing without telling you that, because it goes hand in hand.
Sure.
It goes together. And it's so important that we don't just ignore. Our trauma in our life is not normal. It's not good. It's not, well, that's just my life is kind of how I thought it. You know, we really need to take a little bit to address it and let God apply the balm of healing on it. You know, and I didn't do that. So, but I was doing everything. I mean, I came in because I was the first person to walk through the door that had abortion in their past. Shortly after that, my director came in, and she had abortion in her past. So we kind of shared that vision and that passion together. But again, I was doing administrative work, client advocate. I was, you know, doing everything, and ended up being development director. That's what I was when I left. And just a lot of stress in my life at that time. So anyway, I resigned, and I actually burnt out. I mean, just to be very honest, I burnt out. I was doing way more than I should have. I was going through menopause. I was having some weird health issues. It was freaking me out and giving me night terrors. You know, I was doing a lot. And I burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought God was done with me and never be back.
Oh, but you are back. So what are you doing now?
He wasn't done with me. Well, I took time off is what I did. I took time and just said, okay, there's something going on in here that I've been blind to, I haven't looked at, that's mm-hmm. affecting the way I behave. It's affecting the people because our behavior affects everybody around us. And took some time to let God just really look into that and deal with that. And then I still swore I was never getting back into this space. And to make a long story short, because I really don't want to go down that road of just, that would take too long. But he had me on a path and on a journey, and it was undeniable and unmistakable that I would get here. And I did, well, should I tell it? I mean,
yeah.
Should I tell it? Okay. So I started with the Pregnancy Center in 2015. In 2016, the Lord called me to do a standalone abortion recovery. It was almost not heard of. And I was new to the area. The Pregnancy Center was just getting their feet, you know, getting the network, getting the donations. And I thought, well, that's really stupid. Why would I do that? And so I told God, that's dumb. And I said, no. And then 2 years.
I love how you tell him that.
Well, and you know, he's up there going,
Okay.
I'll get you the next time. But in 2018, I'm in the middle of being a development director. But in the process, I was also the regional coordinator with Silent No More. And really all that meant was my region was north to south central Tennessee.
Okay.
And if somebody contacted through the website and they were in this area, I would get the notification and reach out to them and tell them where to go for help.
Okay, so tell us what Silent No More is for those who are not familiar.
Silent No More is just an awareness campaign, letting people know that abortion hurts. You know, it hurts them. It hurts everybody around them. They have a book out called Shockwaves of Abortion. And so it's a nationwide campaign, and there are regional coordinators all in. Their goal is to have them in all states and various regions of the state.
Okay.
And so I was doing that for a short time. And I had this in my mind. I'm thinking, how am I going to tell them where to go when I don't know what all. I was starting to hear about something called Save One.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was starting to hear that there was these other things. And I thought, well, how am I going to tell them where to go if I don't know what's in my region? And so I had this grand idea that I would begin to reach out to everybody in my region and start to learn who's doing what. And so I could kind of talk to somebody and then gauge, okay, what's best for you, like where you're at spiritually or where you're at, you know, whatever, and kind of guide them and in that direction. But I never had the time because I was too busy. And then I had this idea. So as a development director, I was in my area, you know, sharing about my story with different small groups, business groups and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people weren't coming forward. We live in a small southern town, and I began to understand, not really growing up in a small southern town, but just began to really understand. I think the Lord was showing me that there's a fear that, you know, if they come up to you, all of a sudden everyone's going to know that they had an abortion, and before they leave the building, it's going to be across the county information-wise. And they're fearing the gossip train. And so I had this wild idea. I had never done Zoom or anything virtual. I mean, I've, you know, been online, but I'd never done a virtual meeting of any kind. And I thought, well, I wonder if we do a virtual meeting, a healing group, and then we could, like, include people from different states even, you know. And so I pitched this idea to the director of Silent No More, and, you know, she's like, I don't know about that. And really, to be quite honest, I was very skeptical because in person is the way to go. And as women, we want to be in person. We
right.
want to hug each other. You know,
right.
we want to comfort each other. You know, there's the feeling that you have of the vibe in the room. You just want to give comfort, and virtual just seems very sterile. And so I totally get why she said that. And in the moment she said, you know, oh, I don't know, maybe we should talk about this later, I thought, oh yeah, that was a bad idea. No. Nope. Okay. Not a good idea. And I said no. And I know now that I was saying no to God twice. And then, of course, I resigned, burned out, thought I wasn't going to get anywhere. And I decided, a year later, that I was just going to take time with the Lord. And that's how that happened. And I pulled out of everything I was doing, and I just sat with the Lord for a year
mm-hmm.
and just let Him show me. I mean, I was finally open. Most of us get busy because we don't want to see. We don't want to deal with the painful memories of the past. And I just got to the point where if I didn't, I would be on another road to destruction in a different way. You know, I wasn't living like the alcohol party lifestyle, but my behavior was destructive. And I didn't understand the root of it. I just really didn't understand what was coming from that, why. And I just needed some time to just kind of take a peek. And God is so gentle, you know, with that. And so in his infinite wisdom, here I am still thinking there's just no way. I get in my personal email, which I never used with the ministry, from an organization, which I found out later was brand new at the time, called Support After Abortion. And it said, oh, yeah, we're doing an online conference. It has all these big names on it. And I thought, oh, well, I could just listen. It was free. I can listen. I could not access any one of the speakers. I could only access one of the founders talking about their vision for the ministry. And their vision, well, I'll listen to her, you know. And her vision was that they were going to do a nationwide directory of everyone doing all kinds of abortion recovery. And I'm like, okay, that's my vision on steroids.
Yes.
Wow. And then she said, and we want to do virtual groups, including abortion recovery. And I was like, okay, that's not a coincidence, right? And so
time is a charm.
I'm in this season of healing. So what I'll do is I'll just take another one of their groups because maybe this is what I need healing from. You know, I really didn't at that point. So I went to sign up. Abortion recovery was full. The only group open was Unraveled Roots. And their last group of the year, last spot in the group was for me. And so I got into that. And through that little book study, discovered that there's some codependency interest. Like, what's that mean? I had never heard that word. So they have a codependency virtual group. I signed up for that. And I really learned we're all codependent to a degree. And I'm not really codependent because codependents the way I understand it, want to please everybody else. I didn't care if you were happy yourself. I just wanted you to be happy with me. So I realized I'm kind of like the opposite of codependent. But anyway, through that process, I knew they had been doing these abortion recovery groups. And then I heard them say, we're going to do a Forgiven and Set Free. And I had gotten a little close to some of the people there in the organization. And I asked, can I co-lead with you just to see how you're going to do it? And to continue learning, you know. I still had no really indication in my heart or anything that I would ever do this again as far as myself or anything. We got into that, and 2 weeks in, the main co-leader had to leave, or main leader had to drop out. And they called Victoria Robinson, and she came in, and her and I did this study together, and was so amazing because she was just about to start her ministry, Reassemble. And again, I had no idea how to do this ministry by itself, but it was because she came on and we started talking, and she's like, she does in-person retreats with Forgiven and Set Free. And mm-hmm. she started telling me how she was going to do it. And I started understanding how it could be done, right? But I still wasn't quite ready to do it myself. And then she said, and I'm having a retreat 10 minutes from your house the week we finish this virtual. And I was like, well, how are you doing this in a retreat?
Yeah.
And so we worked it out, and I went. She said, I want you to come be a participant. And I did. And there's a lot of things that happened in there that I'm not going to go into. It was really, really good. But one of the things was God renewed the call.
Mm-hmm.
So Psalm 26:12, I read while I was there in my own personal reading. It said, my foot stands in an even place in the congregations. I will bless the Lord. And I knew when I read that, if our heart is filled with anxiety and unresolved grief, we cannot authentically and transparently lift our hands to the Lord in the congregation because we're holding back from him. We're really kind of saying, okay, I know you see it, but I'm not going to talk to you about it.
Right.
You know, and that's where the name came. And then Jeremiah 29:11-14, which I don't have memorized, but essentially in verse 14, it talks about how it tells how he sent them away captive.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's calling them back. And what I understood from that verse was that he hears the cry and the many who are sitting there silently screaming, help me. I don't know what to do. Help me.
Yes.
And I knew he wanted me to be one person to be raised up to receive them when they come. And so in January 2022, an even place began. Mm-hmm. And in February, we did our first virtual group as an even place. And reached 63 women now have gone through groups since been in 2.5 years. That's pretty good.
That's
awesome.
A
pretty good amount, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm when you said Jeremiah, I was like, because when he brought me to Chattanooga kicking and screaming, I'm like, why do you have me here? And so he took me to Jeremiah 29:7.
Okay.
And it was, pray for the city where I have sent you into exile. Pray for the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And so I've been praying ever since. But I did not know that that memorial was going to be a part of my story as well. So, and it's interesting that we have that same, because I've read that chapter so many times, and I thought, but it, that's exactly where he took me. So anyway.
Well, what's so interesting is that summer, before I started that abortion recovery group, that first virtual and with support after abortion, a friend of mine said to me, I had a business plan written out for this other kind of ministry where I was ready to go with it, I felt. And she said to me, why aren't you doing abortion recovery? And I was like, because I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. That's not for me. I don't even remember saying that. Because when I started it a few months, when I decided a couple months later that that's what God wanted me to do, she was like, do you remember me telling? And I said, no, I don't remember you asking me that question. So God just has an interesting way of keeping us coming back and keeping us coming back. And it's kind of like Jonah.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't let Jonah go from the call he had on Jonah's life.
Right.
And that's kind of how I feel like, because that's stupid. Twice. I wasn't going to say it a third time.
Yeah. I've learned to say yes, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
Even when I can't understand or see it.
Yeah.
It's yes, Lord.
Yeah.
So, this has been such a treat. So tell us, what's in the pipeline for an Even Place? And
well, I'm excited about. So we do Forgiven and Set Free. But part of my story is that all the sexual brokenness in my story, and it is much more than I shared. And I brought that all into my marriage. And, of course, that's attached to abortion. You know, all of that sexual activity, whether done to me or me doing to others, led me on to that abortion, you know, because it was shame. I didn't want people to know I was having sex. Pregnancy would totally reveal that. You know, it's just all this shame. And so we are introducing next year a study called Unbound, and it's Healing from Your Sexual Past. It's a 12-week study. It'll be done virtually. My assistant, Mandy, so God, another sense of humor, brought me an assistant named Mandy, Mindy and Mandy. She's great, though, but she has a real heart for this. Mm-hmm. And so she's doing a pilot study right now. She's getting ready to start that, and then she'll do virtual next year. We're going to start that in February. Really excited because I feel like they complement each other really well. And if, you know, usually we make good relationships with the ladies that we serve, and so then it gives us an opportunity to continue with them. But you know as well as I do that the landscape of abortion recovery healing is changing in the sense that the women are coming within days of their abortion, right? And so it's been my experience that, and I don't have all the experiences in the world, but the experiences that I do have is that the women that are generally within 2 years are just in active grief. And so just like if you were actively grieving something and I set a steak dinner in front of you, you'd be like, no, thank you. You know, give me a shake, but I can't do that.
Right.
And so Forgiven and Set Free is like that steak dinner. And so what we want to do, we found a study. It's called Refuge. And technically, she says that she's had an abortion, but she says in there it's not for abortion recovery. And I say that because I don't want anyone to open that book and not understand. So what we are doing is we're trimming it way down, and we're just focusing on the scriptures and the activities, not her commentary.
In other words,
her commentary is why it's not appropriate for abortion recovery. But the fact that it's centered around grief, that's the purpose of the study. And since she's already done the work, we're going to just start Refuge, but we're going to slim it down. It's an 8-week study. We're going to make it 5 weeks. And it's not going to be active where they're studying the Bible so much as it's we're going to come into the group and we're going to talk about certain things that are in these different chapters and help them lead them through the scriptures and talk about the things and do different activities and, you know, start using the other parts of their brain to help them think, get a different perspective. And hopefully the idea of that study will be to get them prepared to sit down with Forgiven and Set Free and really go deeper with the Lord when they're ready. So that, too, won't be available until next year. So that's the third thing, but the third thing that I'm super excited about is a podcast that we just started recording. So Linda, you're yes. Linda, and I are recording a podcast for the ladies who struggle with abortion.
Yes.
You know, we all know that a lot of times it's in the middle of the night, we're waking up and we're worried or we're stressed or, you know, whatever, and then our thoughts go to the places that we're really, you know, struggling with. And so we want to have a podcast available for women to meet them anywhere they're at, let them take their time getting to know us, you know, through mm-hmm. that, and how we've healed, just how God has met us in these different things. It's going to be short bites of you know, just a short bit of our, it's not us telling our whole story.
Right.
But short bits of how God met us in this particular, you know, with shame or with the long journey of abortion or with the layers of healing
right.
and that kind of thing. So we're just going to kind of break these. These are all conversations we have with women anyway. And so why don't we break it up and put them into podcasts for the women to kind of just, you know, come at their own pace, but yet still receive some understanding and some healing and some truth.
Yes.
Truth with the word.
Wonderful.
So I'm excited about that.
I'm excited for you.
yeah, it's a lot.
Oh, Mindy, it's been such a pleasure to have you here with us today. Now, just a final word to our audience that's joined us today. What would you say?
So I think what my final word of encouragement would be to you is that I mentioned just a minute ago that we heal in layers, and truly, these our children. Never, abortion takes the children from our arms, but never takes them from our heart. And so later on, we might get a good deal of healing from a study or a group or a retreat that we've gone through. But later on, if we get triggered, not to be surprised by that trigger, but to understand, rather, this is just my mother's heart softening again, yet mm-hmm. and getting more tender, and you know, just maybe God taking you to a different layer of healing, and not to be ashamed of that, not to feel guilty about that, not to think anything's wrong with you, but rather than to seek out, okay, what other ways of healing are there of different perspectives? And you know, there's Deeper Still, there's Rachel's Vineyard, there's Surrendering the Secret, there's Transforming Your Heart, there's Her Choice to Heal. I mean, there are so many studies out there and wonderful leaders ready to walk with you in that season. And I would just encourage you, don't ignore it. You know, don't lay subject to the culture that says you have to be okay and you have to get over this, because the reality is God's telling you there's something more. And just to press into that and trust God with it, with your heart.
Yes. Please do not minimize your grief. Don't minimize anything with regard to your abortion trauma. Seek the help that you need. Thank you so much, Mindy, for joining us.
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
And how do people get in touch with you? I know it's an Even Place. Is it .com?
It is.
An evenplace.com. Mm-hmm. So
yes.
That's how you get in touch with Mindy. And I want to thank you guys for joining us today, guys and girls, for joining us today. And if you have a story, an abortion story, and we would love to be able to hear your story and to share it with others, especially if you are on any of those legs of that journey towards healing. We really want all the stories. And so just contact us. Our email address is office@memorialfortheunborn.org. Again, that's office@memorialfortheunborn.org. And we'd love to be able to share your story with everyone else. Thank you so much.